What drives someone to poison themselves daily just to escape the silence of their own thoughts? In 1890, Arthur Conan Doyle introduced readers to a detective so brilliant that ordinary life becomes unbearable, a man who chose chemical oblivion over mental stagnation. This wasn't just shocking Victorian sensationalism, it was a profound exploration of genius as both gift and curse. The Sign of Four solidified Sherlock Holmes as literature's premier detective, while revolutionizing how we think about crime solving. Real police academies still reference Holmes's methods today, and modern adaptations like BBC's Sherlock prove these characters transcend their era. The novel opens with Dr. Watson confronting Holmes about his cocaine habit, a dangerous practice that horrifies the doctor. Holmes's defense is chilling. His mind rebels at stagnation. Without challenging cases, he turns to drugs to escape crushing boredom. This scene reveals the central paradox of extraordinary intelligence. The very qualities that make Holmes exceptional also isolate him from ordinary human contentment. Unlike Watson's romanticized accounts of their adventures, Holmes approaches detection with scientific precision. Having written monographs on obscure subjects like 140 types of tobacco ash and footprint preservation, when he casually deduces Watson's morning activities from mud on his shoes and ink on his finger, then reveals intimate details about Watson's deceased brother by examining a pocket watch, we witness a mind that sees patterns invisible to others, yet cannot find peace in everyday existence. Miss Mary Morstan arrives at 221B Baker Street with a perplexing mystery. Her father, an Indian regiment captain, vanished 10 years ago after summoning her to London's Langham Hotel. He disappeared before they could meet, leaving only luggage with clothes and Andaman Islands curiosities. His sole London acquaintance, Major Sholto, claimed ignorance. 6 years ago, anonymous packages containing valuable pearls began arriving yearly. Now a cryptic letter requests her presence at the Lyceum Theater with two friends, but no police. Among her father's papers, a mysterious building plan marked the Sign of the Four with four unfamiliar names. The setup weaves missing persons, unexplained gifts, and exotic colonial connections into a narrative reflecting Victorian fascination with empire, while foreshadowing darker themes about colonial greed. The mysterious letter leads to Thaddeus Sholto, whose revelations transform the case entirely. His father, Major Sholto, lived in constant terror, especially of men with wooden legs. On his deathbed, he confessed that cursed greed kept Captain Morstan's rightful treasure share from his daughter. When Morstan arrived to claim it, they quarreled, and he suffered a fatal heart attack. Fearing murder accusations, Sholto concealed both body and treasure, a decision that haunted him until death. As the dying major attempted to reveal the treasure's location, he spotted a bearded face at the window and died in terror. His ransacked room contained a note, the Sign of the Four. Thaddeus reveals his brother Bartholomew recently discovered the treasure and has been sending Miss Morstan pearls as her rightful share. He invites them to Pondicherry Lodge to claim her inheritance, worth £500,000. This creates a dilemma for Watson, whose growing feelings for Miss Morstan would make any romantic overture appear like fortune hunting if she inherits such wealth. At Pondicherry Lodge, Bartholomew Sholto lies murdered in his locked laboratory, face frozen in a horrible grin, the treasure gone. Holmes examines the scene with clinical precision, discovering muddy marks on the windowsill, impressions of a wooden stump. Someone with a wooden leg climbed up using a rope, aided by an accomplice. When Watson questions how anyone entered the inaccessible room, Holmes delivers his famous principle. When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. The solution? A trap door to the roof. Most startling are tiny footprints, half normal size, covering the floor. Combined with a poisoned thorn above the victim's ear, they suggest an exotic killer. Holmes's breakthrough comes when he realizes the intruder stepped in creosote, leaving a scent trail for tracking dogs. While Detective Athelney Jones arrests the obvious suspect, Holmes methodically gathers evidence. His genius lies in patience and systematic thinking. Careful observation reveals hidden truths we miss when jumping to obvious conclusions. Holmes's investigation becomes a vivid tour of Victorian London's underbelly. With Toby, a keen-nosed mongrel, they follow the creosote scent through Streatham, Brixton, Camberwell, and Kennington Lane, a zigzag route designed to avoid observation. The trail ends Riverside, where Holmes learns Mrs. Smith's husband left yesterday with his steam launch Aurora after being visited by a wooden-legged man. Rather than involving police, Holmes employs his network of street children, the Baker Street Irregulars, who could go everywhere, see everything, overhear everyone without suspicion. After days without progress, Holmes disguises himself as a sailor and discovers the Aurora concealed at Jacobson's yard. This section showcases Holmes's versatility. He's not merely an armchair theorist, but a man of action who employs disguise and street-level informants. Doyle's atmospheric descriptions transform Victorian London into both setting and character, with the Thames serving as the perfect escape route in an era before automobiles. The climax erupts in a thrilling Thames boat chase as Holmes, Watson, and Jones pursue the Aurora through crowded river traffic. They close in on two figures, the wooden-legged man and a smaller, agile companion moving with inhuman speed. Violence explodes when Tunga, the Andaman Islander, aims his poison dart blowpipe. Holmes and Watson fire simultaneously, sending Tunga into the murky water. Jonathan Small becomes trapped in Riverside mud. In literature's great ironic twist, the recovered treasure chest is empty. Small had dumped the contents into the Thames. Rather than despair, Watson exclaims, "Thank God!" The golden barrier between him and Miss Morstan has vanished. He confesses his love, which she reciprocates, valuing affection over wealth. The empty chest becomes a powerful metaphor for greed's futility. The Agra treasure brought only misfortune, death for Captain Morstan, paranoia for Major Sholto, murder for Bartholomew, imprisonment for Small. Only when the treasure vanishes can Watson and Mary find happiness, freed from its corrupting influence. The novel concludes with Holmes's dismay at Watson's engagement, a moment crystallizing their fundamental difference. Holmes declares, "Love opposes true cold reason," vowing never to marry because emotional attachments compromise analytical abilities. While Watson gains domestic bliss and Jones claims credit, Holmes reaches for his cocaine bottle. Extraordinary capabilities demand profound sacrifice. This juxtaposition established detective fiction's most influential paradigm, the detective as voluntary outsider. From Philip Marlowe to Harry Bosch, countless detectives would echo this belief that emotional detachment is the price of exceptional work. The Sign of Four established patterns defining the genre: locked room mysteries, exotic backstories, methodical clue gathering, dramatic chases, final explanations. Beyond plot innovations, rich characterization cemented Holmes and Watson's literary legacy. In a world mistaking busyness for purpose, Holmes reminds us that true insight requires uncomfortable focus. His tragedy, and perhaps ours, is that qualities making us exceptional can isolate us from ordinary contentment. The question remains, what price are we willing to pay for clarity in a world rewarding comfortable illusions?